Thanks for tuning into the China FlexFit podcast. My name is Verena, and today I'm talking with Alada about his journey of becoming a freelancer in the film and TV industry in China. We are discussing the challenges of when and how to switch from a typical 9-to-5 job into being a self-sustaining freelancer, and what advices he has to share for anyone planning similar changes. Tune into this episode and learn from Aladdin's story.
Hello everyone, my name is Aladdin Faré. I'm from Paris. I've been in China now for almost 8 years. And as you're listening to this podcast, I think I will just turn 35 in a couple of days. So I work in the film and TV industry mainly. I was working in the film and TV industry back in France. And quickly, my character development arc. I worked in historical documentary for a couple of years in Paris. Then one day I went to an event in Chengdu that was in 2014. There was those kind of, not like film festival, but more, you know, like a professional event where like television and film producer meet. I went there. I was a little bit baffled by what I saw in China. I was really impressed by it. And I think that's like the so many people would say. And then I decided to basically jump ship and to come all the way here. So I studied Chinese for a couple of years. Then I work as a 9-to-5 job in a couple of companies, private and public sector. And since September 2021, I run my own company. I'm basically a freelancer with a couple of assistants. And we work in film and TV. That means I would do, it's really random. Like, I guess any of you listeners, like if you run your own company and you have a small stuff, you would do a lot of things. So I would do film translation in the morning. In the afternoon, I would do like film editing. And then at night, I might record a podcast, for example. And so yeah, lot of random stuff. Also, I brought like YouTubers onto Bilibili. So as you can see, like it's really varied. Like I try to find as many potential stuff as possible.
Thank you, Alada, and bienvenue to the China FlexFit podcast. So you already gave a quite good introduction about yourself. Let's go again a little bit back also about your motivators. What brought you initially to China? And how then did you get the idea of creating your own company?
So first, at the beginning, when I came to China, it was I've been working in historical documentary for a few years in Paris. My master degree, I have two master degrees. One is in film and TV production, and the second one is in history, and that was actually about the China-German military relationship in the 20s and 30s. That's like a really nerdy topic that no one knows about. So I had some kind of already interest about China. And then later on, as I came to Asia to this event in Chengdu, I saw what was happening there, and I thought like, okay, I was 26 at that time. I was a little bit tired of my Paris life. I wanted to try to go something abroad. So why not go on the other side of the planet and go to a country that I don't know the language and where I've just been for 5 days? But why not? But I think I had like, I guess some people want to learn tango and they will go to Argentina. Some people have more a thing for anime and they will want to go to try to live in Japan. I don't know. I had a thing for China. I can't really explain it. Also, I could see that there were more economical opportunities. So I went there. But between the moment I stepped out of the plane in Nanjing to go study and the moment I created my company, like more than 5 years, and a pandemic happened. So it was like a kind of a long process. I came, I didn't really had the idea of becoming my own boss, but I thought I will go, I will try things out. I give myself 3 years, and now 3 years have turned into almost 8. So yeah.
I can very much relate to that. I was also 26 when I came to China. It was more by accident, but definitely once I arrived here, I felt the vibe. I really felt this is a thriving economy, a thriving environment. So something definitely that you really can enjoy and then you can grow in.
I wish one day we could hear one interview of someone who would say the opposite. Like, I came to China and I was appalled by it. Like, everyone came the first time and everyone is just wooed by it. It's a bit repetitive at some point, but it is true.
These people actually existing. I saw them in some former companies where I was working. I remember one colleague, he was leaving after 6 weeks. He was here actually assigned for 2 years. After 6 weeks, he said either they sent him back to Germany or he's gonna quit. He can't take it anymore. So, in order to deep dive a little bit into the advice that you might share, can you tell us a little bit more about your company? For example, what kind of setup is it? What kind of clients are you serving? And what's the exact portfolio of what you're doing?
Well, okay, so I will try to be brief. First of all, what I think is interesting for your listeners, I don't know where are they mostly located, but in terms of if you want to work in film and TV, like, you would definitely need to be in Beijing. So that's my case, obviously, because if you live in Shanghai, that's, you will find more like agencies, like publicity agencies. And then if you would go more to Shenzhen, where all the tech is happening, this is where you have more 3D animation kind of companies. So it's very interesting. Of course, you do have film company in Shanghai, in Xi'an, in Nanjing, wherever. But what's interesting is that if someone like me, who kind of works as a bridge, and that could be like helping a Chinese company put a movie abroad, or on the opposite, have like a European company shoot a documentary here in China, then Beijing would be more like a place you would like to be, because all the crowd of producer, director, investor, they are mainly in Beijing. Also, all the officials and you know, like all the culture ministry and things like that, like, are in Beijing. There was a little bit of a detour, but just to explain how important, like, the location of the city is important. Then in terms of what the company does, the first client that I got was a magazine called The World of Chinese Magazine. It's an English magazine that basically gives like social stories, and it's published in Beijing, and they wanted to expand their readership and by doing more videos and podcasts. And because I was doing my own podcast regarding China culture industry, so I was interviewing a lot of people who are directors, producers, making music festival, things like that. And so they came out to me and they're like, Aladdin, we need you to do a podcast for us. And at that time I had a 9-to-5 job and I was like, oh, okay. So now I have like a part-time job. And then I started having more source of income of like doing movie translation, things like that. And so from that on, like after a few months when I had like a couple of clients on one side and my full-time job on the others, but at some point after 6 months, I'm like, okay, now I feel ready to jump ship. So I created my own company. And so as soon as you have your own company, then people start coming more to you and like, oh, I know that you are your own boss and we have actually need a service. But yeah, to explain that, it started with one tiny job and then it just expand, because as soon as you're own boss, then the word basically starts to spread out.
First of all, this is a very reasonable approach. And second, also because the market, I could assume, is changing so fast. Once you specialize, you're anyway already outdated. So looking a little bit into the current situation of the film and TV industry, what could you tell us about that? What is special about it, or what are the drives in there?
So the one thing which is a little bit frustrating is that when I came when I came to start Chinese, that was in 2015, and that was kind of the heyday of film and TV. But then when I started working, like all I could get, I sent like hundreds of CV all across. That was kind of a really humbling experience because I thought, okay, I speak a little bit of Chinese and I've directed a couple of documentaries and I have like few years of experience, I'm sure I can find a job. And oh boy, was I wrong. So I managed to find one job that was really technical, like film editor. And that was interesting because if you are not from China, and unless you're fully bilingual, in the film and TV, they would really like to have you more as like a technical person. So a cameraman or a film editor, or if you're experienced enough, you would bring like investor from abroad. But the only thing I could do was film editor, basically. And so, but back in the day, like between, because if you look at the number of movie that came out in China, like in the early 2000s, you only had like 50 something. Then in the 2010s, like especially in 2016, 17, you had up until 700 movie being produced. And just before the pandemic, actually, you had some kind of a a slowdown, because then suddenly people realized that, oh, making movies is actually not that profitable. And then the pandemic came and just basically wiped out like a lot of companies. So they are still producing hundreds of movies, but really like the heydays are gone now.
Yeah, things are definitely changing dramatically. And that's why you said it already before, you're taking on more things in order to see what is now the next big thing, the next big trend where you can go deeper. In your industry, you as a flexpet are rather unique, or do you meet other flexpets?
There are a few like me, but not that much, because as everyone know, like the first way to stay here are definitely to have like the right visa and the right like residence permit. So I think you would have like a bunch of people that would be working into like all the state media, CGTN, China Daily, those kinds of, like there's like a few hundreds of people working there. And then you would have like a few like private individual who would be like cameraman, director, producer, but those are often working with their spouse. So they stay on a family visa, or they create a company together, but they have kind of a partner in crime, let's say. Like their spouse is there, you know, to work with them. And this is not my case. This is the one thing I'm kind of really proud of. Like I managed to step on my 2 feet and go on by myself. People who are here in the film and TV who are private individual are usually married to someone.
So to say, you have help, but of course you're driving your own career.
Yes, indeed.
And as you studied Chinese, I assume your Chinese pretty good. Could you survive that business if you would speak not any Chinese?
I think, you know, that's really interesting, because when I started this company, I was certain I would kind of work more with local clients. And also, I think I got kind of lucky, because the pandemic, I mean, everyone remembers, I think everyone who's still here remembers that there was like a drove of people who basically left and couldn't come back. So that kind of had a vacuum effect on the film and TV industry, so I could find more easily gigs to do. So that kind of helped. But what happened is that I often work more with a Chinese company who want to put their message abroad, mostly like private companies. And so most of the people, some of them, they would speak English. But I realized that if the one person in the company speak English, this is not the case of everyone in the company. And I do think that really the fact that I can go have my lunch break with my colleagues who are not English speaker, they are not the one deciding if I'm going to work with them, but I'm sure then they would say, oh, you know what, Aladdin is a nice guy. Like, we like him. We like working with him. We can talk. We can exchange on WeChat. We can banter during lunch. We can talk about the latest movie that we saw and that we liked and hated. So I think it, in terms of business itself, it's not useful. But then in terms of day-to-day operation, like, that really helps. I think at the end of the day, wherever you live, like, if you don't make an effort to learn the local language, like, what's the point of living there anyway?
So let's now focus more on those Chinese clients. How exactly do they find you? Because probably they won't Google your name or Google, you know. But how exactly do you also maybe enforce that they really find you?
So a small tip to any of your listeners, then if you want to be your own boss and you want to find clients, or, I mean, just go to parties. That if I retrace back every single people I work with at the really beginning, a bit less after, but it's just because I went to events, like either professional event or parties. I have like this wonderful website that I spend a lot of time working on. And at the end of the day, the only few emails that I received were not at all remotely interesting for my business. But then all the contract that I signed for the past 2 years are basically because I went to a party, and that's how you find the people. But that being said, because, you know, as we are all on WeChat here, and I realize also because of the pandemic that didn't help, that I had to really focus on local companies to work with, that I don't have a Gongzhong Hao, like a WeChat public account, but I did made, like, I work with a designer, and we did like a really nice condensed 6-7 page PPT in a square format, so that, you know, you can watch it more easily on your phone instead of a computer screen, like 16:9 format, so that each time I meet someone new, and for business, I'm just sending them my PPT, which is only 7 page, because sometimes Chinese companies, they send you their PPT, which is like 40 page. It's a bit much. So I still think you need to present yourself in a nice way, because I think then after they also have to convince their own colleagues and manager that, okay, we should work with Aladdin because blah, blah, blah. And look at his company. He looks pretty professional, right? And also the second thing is that right now, because I do feel that I'm not like known enough in my industry, I'm starting to do my own podcast and like a small Bilibili channel to really focus on film and TV, basically with Movie Critic, like something really basic. The project just started like last month, so I can't really share if it's going to be successful or not, but I really want to try to use that as kind of to kind of break the wall of friendship. Like I want to go beyond that. So as much as it's important to go to parties, I think like if in the future, the more you are like an expert on a field and you try to put things on social media, I think it's going to be important.
Definitely. Also, we create a link to your podcast in our show notes for all people who are interested to listen and, of course, also to support you. Now, if you look at the real work, the hard work on editing, on creating versus business development, how's the balance right now?
This is like kind of the nightmare, I think, for any, you know, freelancer. And it's like kind of find the balance between you have your clients, they pay you to do stuff, so you got to deliver by the deadline. And I think if you mess that up, like you're going to lose some pretty solid trust right there. So you have to make that. But at the same time, like I see, because most of the time people hire you to do the boring stuff, right? So that means that then you have to, so that means that at the same time, if you want to upgrade, because most of my job, like as I said, like movie translation, hosting and editing podcast and do a little bit of film editing, that's nice. I'm really happy of what I do, but I would like to really upgrade and at some point like being a director or like being a writer, things like that. So I think the higher you go onto the food chain of, you know, you start from production assistant and then you go up all the way to director and showrunner, then you can work on better interesting projects and you get better paid. So for that, you also have to find a time. I don't know how that would work in other industry. You need to have your kind of your own stuff that you work for free. Like the develop, as we say, you develop a TV series, a book, a movie script or a YouTube channel, things like that. And so, I think it's really important that I have to find a balance between my client and at the same time kind of working on my own stuff so that when I wake up in the morning, I'm like, okay, I'm also doing something for myself and that I can try to sell it later. And if it fails, then okay, worst case, I have like worked on my craft. But yeah, it's really important to find a balance, because if you just focus on the job that your clients give you, I think then you end up at some kind of, you corner yourself a little bit, unless you want to be the best podcast producer in the world. That's cool. In this area where everything is, where it's really competitive, you have to find a balance between your own project that you develop for free and the one of your clients that pay you for it.
Yeah, I think it's very easy to get stuck, and I would suppose it's almost in every, even 9-to-5 job, the same. You might be very good at your current job, which usually also leads that you're stuck because no one wants to promote you because you're doing your job so well. And on the other hand, you always need to think one step ahead. What am I able to do next? How can I prepare for that? How can I skill myself up in order to be able to do that later on? And it's the same for your business as for many other people as well. How important is social media during your business development?
For answer that question, just to add on a little bit, because when I had my 9-to-5 job here in China for 4 years, 3 years and a half, like I was doing my job, but at the same time I was doing my small tiny project that I was not being really paid for, like for example my first podcast. But I think basically, like, because I started this kind of passion project like 3 years ago before starting my own company, then after you had up all those efforts, then this is how I get contacted by my first client. So I will admit that a lot of times I was having a lot of self-doubt, but I think like if any of your listener, like you have a 9-to-5 job and you are thinking, how could I, you know, move forward, do something else? Like, I think you should really find the one passion project that's not going to pay you, but at least you're going to get a skill. And I think the skill is the most important. because you get the skill and then people will hire you for your skill. They are not going to hire you for anything else. And I think that's like the one thing, if you want to, you know, move out of your 9-to-5 job, find a skill, work on it. And then at some point, like, I'm sure you will be paid for that. So you were asking me regarding social media. I think it's a little bit like the website. Like, I post what I work on LinkedIn and on Twitter. Also because, you know, I think if I was posting about like the Chinese EV industry, electric vehicle, I'm sure I would have a lot of people who would follow me and I would have a lot of interaction with people all across the world. But the fact is that I mostly talk about my projects, which are like on a small scale, to be honest, at the moment. So for me, seriously, social media is not that important. I mean, it's not. LinkedIn and Twitter for me is not that important to find any business. I think that's, to be honest, like that has not helped me at all. But like I said, I want to try to develop more actually like the Chinese social media. And maybe this is going to be another story, because I do see that there is not such a need now anymore for international companies to. There is not a need now for international company to bring stuff in China, but I do sense that people in China, like, they really want to go abroad. They really want to push their movie abroad, their TV series. And I'm not just talking about like the states, you know, I'm talking about like private individual. There are so many film directors, because I'm French, and they come to me and they're like, Aladdin, do you know anyone at the Cannes Festival that, you know, you could show my movie to? I'm like, dude, it doesn't work like this. Like, just send them your movie, and if it's good, you will be selected. Okay, it would help if you know a curator to at least push the door, but if your movie is bad, like, it doesn't matter if the guy's my best buddy. Like, this is not gonna work. This is why the Cannes Festival is the Cannes Festival, because they put quality first. But I do sense that, yeah, there is a lot of people who want to make an effort onto putting things abroad, so... That's why I think maybe social media. I think if any of you have speak a bit of Chinese, I think you should try to invest some of your time into Chinese social media. But maybe don't do it about like to say how great Chinese food is, because yeah, I don't think what would be the value in it.
And it sounds easy, but also from previous interviews where I heard a lot about Chinese social media. First of all, it's highly competitive. It's so full with content, and to really shine and stand out and make people following you and always have content that's really interesting, that attracts people, that's so, so difficult. And it also takes a lot of effort. And the other thing you were saying, everyone, when they're trying something, when they're creating something, they need a door opener. They need someone to help them, give a little bit of a promote, but it's not easy. Looking a little bit more again into your business, what already surprised me in the beginning when you said it's better to be in Beijing, is there any other surprises or challenges that you faced during the last years which would be interesting for our audience?
What's funny is that when I have like meetings with potential clients, basically the first question they ask me is like, how many people are in your company? And I find this so interesting, because it's a kind of I think it's still a little bit of mindset of, you know, the planned economy. And also, like, I can really see that sometimes on shoot, like, maybe not so much on documentary, because, you know, it's a poor people industry, so you have to make do, and, you know, you can be the director, but then at the same time, like, for example, like, I was working on this documentary regarding the town of Yiwu, which is like where all the manufacturer have their showcase. And, you know, like, I was on one side directing and asking questions, but on the others, like, I would be like being like a camera B-roll, doing the B-roll, like the camera number two, let's say, because we had a proper cameraman, but then I was there to assist him at the same time when needed be. Because otherwise, like, that's just, you have to be, you know, you have to be a little bit imaginative. But in movies, for example, like, I think they hire way too many people. And there is still this mindset that when I talk to potential clients, they are like, how many people are in your company? And it's like the first thing they ask you. And me, I'm just like, well, it's me and my couple of assistants. I've been told, don't say they're part-time. Like, just say you have assistant, but don't even say that they're part-time, because then you won't be serious. And it's really kind of still a cultural difference, I think, because for me, I would just tell them, look at the credit I've done. Okay, it's not that much, sure, but it's still something, and I managed and call any of my previous clients. I'm sure anyone would be grateful of what I've done with them. But I think, yeah, it's the first thing they ask, and I think that's really interesting. And the second thing is that I feel like people really want to be your friend. Like, there is this kind of things where, like, being friend is more important than having a proper expert on the project you're going to work on. And I don't know, I guess as a French person, I think what matters first is that we deliver the goods, we do the good thing, and then maybe we'll see how we can become friends. And also what's funny is that the longer the meeting is regarding the whole project, then the less the budget is. It's always at the end. You have like, I remember this producer, this guy like invited me to be like a film editor on his 1 hour documentary project that was going to be broadcasted on French television. And he asked me like to a couple of dinners and a couple of coffees. And at the end of it, I was like, dude, okay, but okay, sure. Like, we talked about the project thoroughly and you give me all the stories and blah, blah, blah. But like, what's the actual budget and the deadline? And that's the moment when he gave me like such a ridiculous price. And then I'm like, well, I'm sorry, like, you're not going to buy me with a dinner. I mean, I'm not going to spend 1 month for a really nice Beijing, like Beijing kaoya, like a Beijing roasted duck. Like, I'm sorry for this. So yeah, you meet those kind of people. You have to be wary and avoid losing too much time.
If you now think, oh, you already mentioned a few things that could be useful for our audience. What would be, if from your experience, the best advice to other flexpets when they want to run their own company? And let's now neglect in which industry?
Well, I mean, if one day one of you would like to start your own company, I think the first thing is that don't start your company until you actually already have clients lined up. Like, start working with them, find a way to get the money, like ask another friend, you know, to do the fa piao for you. And like, don't start a company if you have nothing prepared, or start a company and then be ready to have nothing to do for 1 year. I think that's like the... that's basically the mindset. I didn't do it, but I do know that there are districts in China. Depends on the town, depends on the city, depends on the province. But if you're a flexpat, but I mean, if you're a foreigner, basically, then you could have like some help. So for example, just to give you a tiny example, that was the case like a few months ago. I'm not sure if it's still the case, but like the Haidian district in Beijing, which is basically where all the big university and the big tech companies are, the local district is really keen on tech companies. So if you have a foreign passport and you come here, and then you could get like a, they could help you make your own company. It has to be a keji gongse, like, which is technology company. That, you know, and I'm sure like those cases can be found all across China. You just have to look for it. It doesn't mean that they're going to say yes each time, but if you present an interesting business plan or an interesting plan, and also you have a bit of time, because me, I didn't do it because it was, I think, like 6 months to get like the whole process approved. And I was like, okay, you know what? The hell with that. I will just like pay my agent, do a company in 3 months, and then I will be done with that. I can't wait that much time with maybe the hope it can work or not. So, so yeah, I think those are the two main advice that I would give. Like, look around to see like what the local district can give you, and then also like try to do your own stuff by yourself during your 9-to-5 job.
And also gives you then more confidence when you're starting, because you already have a few clients, you're already busy, and those then probably also help you to get more clients.
Yeah, indeed. Yeah, because if you're, yeah, because then if you're like, if you start a company, but then you're desperate to find someone to work with, like I think in the karma, that doesn't suit you well when you're out, like giving your, when you're adding people WeChat and talking about your stuff.
If you look back on your career and your private life, what are you most thankful for?
I mean, I think I would be thankful really to all my Chinese friends, I would say, that helped me, you know, when you're like, oh, can you help me find a flat? You know, at the really beginning, you're in China, and I still remember a couple of friends who like, help me find a flat. You know, it's simple, but like, you're just here, you don't know nothing, you can barely say like, wo yao zhige, things like that. And so now, right now, when I see some of, because there's a lot of Chinese who would actually go study in France to learn film and TV. It's funny, it's just basically like the US, the UK, or France, because we have like a strong film and TV culture. no one goes to Germany to study film. I'm sorry. So I would help those people. I would try to help them, you know, like as much as I can. So I think that's what I'm really grateful, because if I didn't have my friends, like I don't know how far I would be today, to be honest.
And anything you're specifically afraid of?
Well, I think we already talked about that. I think the biggest fear when you run your own company is that you're kind of always afraid of not having the right balance, because on one point you do want to get that gig. Like I just signed up, for example, for a job this summer to do a marketing video. I'm sure I can pull this up, but at the same time, I'm thinking, I hope this is not going to entangle too much my Chinese podcast plans and my writing of TV series that I would like to develop. But at the same time, I still got to pay my rent, and I still need to, you know, have a paid project, because also that's like in your portfolio when you have like a proper things you can show instead of something you just developed, which is a Word document. So I think that's my fear, is like always, do I find the right balance? And unfortunately, you can only know the answer when you tried. Like you can ask your friends to help you out, but then everyone, I think they have their own take on how to do it.
Who should listen to this episode, and what is your core message from today?
I think I would say it's okay to have a 9-to-5 job, but then if you want to get out of it, find your passion project and then work it like hell, and then get a skill out of it. And then from that skill, then you maybe can develop something that you can go further and be your own boss. I think that's the way I did it. A couple of times I wanted to give up. I really did. At some point I wanted to, you know, just restart study at Beijing Film Academy. And suddenly 3 weeks later, my first client calls me and says, oh, do you want to work with us? So I'm not saying it's going to work every time, but if you give yourself some time and the patience, maybe that will work. I'm not saying it's going to be always, but you should try.
Patience, persistence, and I think these things, what you discovered, what a lot of people have gone through, you rather see it on a long-term basis. On short cycles, very hard to see. But if you look back, like the last 5 years, 10 years, then you could see there was always this little bit of lucky incident. There was always the persistence playing in. You stayed more patient, and this usually then pays out at the end.
Yeah, I do think, okay, if I may add one more thing, because when I started my podcast about China culture industry called Middle Earth, I do remember that I had many people who kind of doubted it, the value of it. And me, it was more a gut feeling. I did a show that I wanted to listen to, basically, because no one was covering China culture industry, which is my bread and butter, in English. So I'm like, you know what, I'm going to do that damn show by myself. And I do had a few friends, who kind of doubted the value of it. And I was like, maybe they're right, but I just kept moving. And later on, it's all thanks to that show, because I interviewed over 200 people, decision maker in the film and TV industry. I met tons of people. And this is thanks to that damn show that I'm able to be who I am today. Well, to do what I do today. But it's really because it came from a gut feeling, and it, like you said, like it's really like something you started a long, long time ago, and then it just adds up, but you just have to wait like a few years. So yeah, okay, I think the core message is definitely about, if you want to plan something, like don't plan for the next 3 months, like think like 5 years and think about who you want to become. I roughly know who I want to be, and I already kind of have a plan in my head, but I know it's going to take me like a really long time. And then that's the balance you have to find, like make the money while working on your dream.
Then Aradan, thanks a lot for your time today, for sharing all the knowledge and experience to our FlexPod audience. You have a lovely day.
You too. Thank you, Verena.
Thanks for listening to this episode. Please recommend it to your friends and colleagues and those who would like to hear more from our FlexPod community. Give us a 5-star rating in your respective podcast app so every FlexPod out there can easily find us. Connect with Aradan directly and feel free to ask questions within our FlexPod podcast community. No matter if you're working in corporate, are a fully fledged entrepreneur, or at the beginning of your career. We love to see this community grow and support each other. That's it for now. See you next time.